Thank you for taking the time to share in Truth Infusion Ministries. Support for this radio program comes from your generous gifts and donations. You can find out more about David Markham and the Truth Infusion team at www.truthinfusion.com.
Some of you probably have more faith in your ability to screw everything up than God's ability to turn your life around. Unbelieving is putting too much faith in my trajectory because of where I've come from and not seeing Jesus as the one who can turn it around. Some of us have never yet come to the place where I understand you can ask Him to make the dead come to life.
The anointed preaching of the Word of God is like infusing strong medicine into a sick body. The modern day church is sick, and what it really needs is an infusion of the truth. Hello, truth seekers. My name is Corey Callicutt, and welcome to Truth Infusion, the radio aspect of Truth Infusion Ministries. It is our prayer that in the next 30 minutes, God Himself will infuse life-giving truth into your heart. With that in mind, here's Pastor David Markham with this week's infusion of the truth.
Four prayers God will hear. The first one is this. The first prayer that God will hear is this. It's a humble, faith-filled prayer. Listen real quickly as I just read this story to you. This is chapter 7, beginning of verse 1. It says, "Now when he concluded all these sayings in the synagogue and the hearing of the people, he entered into a place, Jesus entered into a place called Capernaum, and a certain centurion servant who was dear to him was sick and ready to die. So when he heard about Jesus, he sent some elders from the Jews to him, pleading with him to come heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they begged Jesus earnestly, saying that this guy for whom you should do this is deserving because he loves our nation. And he's built us a synagogue." Now, let me pause right there just for a moment, because what's happening is this guy, this centurion, he's a guy of position. He's a man of some kind of power. He's a man of influence. He's a man of means, but he's not a Jew. And he knows that Jesus is a Jew, and he knows Jesus is coming. And he's got some faith in Jesus for some reason or another, but he's got enough faith that he sent some of the Jewish elders that, "Hey, go get this Jesus guy, because my servant is sick, and he needs some healing." And so he calls out to him, and when they go to Jesus, they say, "Look, come do this for him. This is a neat guy. He loves our nation." He's not talking about the country they lived in. He's talking about it's a word for people. He loves our people. And what he was saying was, "He loves your people." And he ain't just saying he loves your people. How many of y'all know somebody can say, "Oh, I love you"? Yeah, you know what that means. All right, but what they said was, he's not a talker, this guy's a doer. Because he didn't just say he loves our people. We know he does. He built us a synagogue. So this guy's invested his own money, and he's built this synagogue for these Jewish people. And they say, "Man, go, he's deserving of help." So Jesus starts going with him. And as he gets close to this guy's house, let me just read you what the scripture says. Verse 6 says, "Then Jesus went with them, and when he was already not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying to him, 'Lord, don't trouble yourself. I'm not worthy you should come under my roof. Therefore, I didn't even think myself worthy to come to you. But if you'll just say the word, my servant will be healed. For I also am a man placed under authority, having soldiers under me. I say to one, go, and he goes. I say to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, I say, do this, and he does it.' And then when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him." The first kind of prayer God will hear you pray is a humble, faith-filled prayer. Here's why we see those from this story number one. First thing I notice about this guy, he sent those Jewish guys to go talk to Jesus because he didn't feel like he was even worthy to go talk to him. That's why he sort of freaks out when he sees him coming towards his house. "Go tell him, man, you ain't gonna come here." Y'all ever had somebody come to show up at your house? You're like, "No, I ain't cleaning this thing up." You know what I'm saying? "Then we ain't ready for you to come up in here." No, he said, "Man, no. I didn't mean for you to bring him here. I'm not worthy for him to come in my house. I didn't even think I was worthy to go to him myself. That's why I asked you to go to him." I believe God understands when we come to him with a humbleness that says this. How many of you know this? God don't owe us nothing. He don't owe us anything. Sometimes I think we come thinking, man, God, I've been good, or I've been trying, or I've been, and we come with whatever. Hey, look, when he gave us our first breath, he gave us more than he ever owed us. But he's chosen to do that. He chose to let us not just have our first breath, but have enough to live this long in life. He's been good to us because he chooses to be good to us. But he doesn't owe us anything. And when I come to God, first of all, I need to come to a place knowing he don't owe me anything. But if he decides to give me something, it's just because of his own goodness and his promise. The first prayer that he'll hear you pray is a humble, faith-filled prayer. And I say faith-filled because this guy, when he says this to Jesus, I'm not worthy, but I do understand this. The reason I know you ain't even got to come to my house, I'm a man that understands authority. I know what authority is. I got people that serve under me. I tell this guy to go and he goes. I tell this one to come and he comes. I tell my servant do this and he does it. So I understand, Jesus, you're a man of authority. If you just say it, it'll be done. And so he sends somebody to Jesus, and this is a humble, faith-filled, he genuinely believes that God will do it. Listen, when you're going to ask him for something, don't ask him for something unless you're ready to believe he can do it. But if you're going to believe he can do it, believe he can do it. Let me tell you four things real quick that will keep you from praying this kind of prayer. Number one, pride. Pride will keep you from praying this kind of prayer. By the way, I hope you know by the end of tonight, all prayers aren't prayed with words. But pride will keep you from praying this kind of prayer. The second thing that will keep you from praying this prayer is stubbornness. Some of y'all was pointing. That's not nice. Don't be pointing at people. Stubbornness. I don't even have to elaborate on that, do I? Let me make sure you hear me again. There are two things so far that'll keep you from praying this prayer. And if you can't pray this prayer, you won't have this prayer answered. The healing won't come like it came for this man. Pride, stubbornness. Somebody said rebellion. Well, you ain't wrong about that. But beyond pride and stubbornness, there's a couple of more things. And one of them is just apathy. And it is, I just don't really care. Hey, man, this guy in this story, who was he coming to Jesus for? For his servant. It wasn't for himself. Now, somebody's going to say, well, his servant's serving him, so he's going to get the benefit if his servant gets healed. This man came to Jesus because he had compassion. He cared about his servant. And the Lord saw that. Jesus understood that. But if you're apathetic, you won't pray this kind of prayer. How do we get apathetic? Man, my heart gets hard because of trash in my life. Whether it's what somebody else dumped on me or what I dumped on myself, but apathy, okay? Pride, rebellion, apathy, and one last thing, just not desperate enough. Now, here's a guy who got to a place, realized he couldn't fix it, and so it made him desperate. And in my little notes, I put, not desperate enough, ... yet. See, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Yeah, because you done been there. See, if God sets his sights on you, if he believes in you, he's only going to let you go so far before he gets you over that spot, where that yet spot. Because how many of y'all know he'll get you to the place where you're desperate enough to cry out a prayer that says, I can't fix this. I might have made this mess, but I can't get out of it. I need some help to get up out of here. Okay, that's the first prayer he'll hear. Let me share with you the second prayer he'll hear. Look with me real quick in the scriptures. If you just go down a few verses, you're going to see this in Luke 7. And there's a story the very next day, it says, verse 11, and it happened the day after that he went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and a large crowd came. And when he came near to the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, and the only son of his mother, she was a widow. Do you guys see that in verse 12? Verse 13 says, when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her, and he said to her, do not weep. And I want you to hold that thought for a second, because it makes no sense to me that Jesus is going to look at this woman and say, do not weep. She done lost her husband, and now she lost her only child. But he looks at her, the first thing he says is, don't weep. Then he came and touched the open coffin. Now, I'm wondering why the coffin's open, but the Lord knew what he was fixing to do. He came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still, and he said, young man, I say to you, Talitha, I say to you, arise. So he who was dead sat up and began to speak. And then he presented him to his mother. Hey, let me tell you, If he can do that, he can do whatever you need. Amen. But here's the second kind of prayer God will answer. When I first started looking at this passage, I want to call it the unprayed prayer. But let me say it like this, the unverbalized prayer. I want you to notice two big differences in the first two stories. In the first story, we got a guy sick, maybe sick unto death. He might die. He's in a bad way. We ain't sure he's going to get better. So the centurion sends somebody out to Jesus, okay? He makes a specific request. Go get Jesus to come heal my servant. But second story, we ain't got a guy that's sick unto death. He's already dead. He's gone. It's over with. World wrote him off. Got a death certificate. It's done. Bye-bye. History in the past, right? There's not a logical hope that this thing could turn around. And not only that, but in this story, nobody ever asked Jesus to raise him from the dead. But he sure did it anyway, didn't he? Let me share with you just a couple thoughts about this. Why in the world did Jesus do what he did? And why would he sometimes answer the prayer that we didn't even yet put into words? Because he's always up to something. Let me tell you, he's always up to something. Now, in this story, you watch what takes place. As Jesus comes into town, he's got a crowd with him. Remember, because stuff been happening, because stuff is always happening where Jesus is. Okay, he's got a crowd coming with him. He's coming into town. As he comes into town, there's a crowd coming out of town. So you got two crowds. There's a crowd coming out of the town. They're in a funeral procession, and then they got this casket. These guys are carrying this open casket. You got Jesus with his crowd, and two crowds bump into each other. And that's a great setup for something big to happen. Okay, and as they bump into each other, especially when Jesus is in the middle of two crowds bumping into each other, something's fixing to go down. All right, so as they get close to one another, Jesus notices this widow. She's a widow, which means she's already lost her husband, and now he understands that this funeral service is for her only son. And in their culture, that it's one thing for a widow in our culture to lose their only child, but in that culture, man, her offspring, if her husband's already gone, her offspring's her only hope. That's the only person that's going to necessarily be responsible for taking care of her. So Jesus is moved with compassion on her, and then he turns to her and he says, "Woman," what'd he tell her? "Don't weep." Now, he hasn't said, I'm gonna raise him from the dead. He hasn't said anything to the boy yet. Ain't no healing taking place. He just looks at mama and says, "Quit crying. Quit crying." And that part of it kind of blows my mind. Two things that cause the Lord. Two things that cause the Lord to do what he would do in a situation where sometimes there's a need that's bigger than we got guts enough to ask God to do. And that's exactly what happens here, because I'm thinking mama never once dreamed that she could ask Jesus to make her son come back to life. But she had two things going for her. Position and proximity. Here's what I mean by those two things. Number one, what happens to this lady is going to affect a bunch of people, and Jesus knows it. And when Jesus does something in her and for her, it's going to affect everybody around her, because of the position she has in the community and because of the position she has in the moment, it's a great setup for God to do something and a lot of people be affected. By the way, never write yourself off and your story off when you're in a position where when God does something whack in your life, it affects a lot of people. Her position set her up for God to do something amazing. And then her proximity, and all I mean by that is her closeness. She messed around and got too close to Jesus for something not to happen. Let me just tell you something. If you get close to him, something's going to, you don't get close to life and something don't happen. Okay? So because of her position and proximity, things changed. But you know what? You know what will keep you from praying this kind of prayer? You're too busy weeping. Now you remember what he said to the lady, which makes no sense to us. Don't be crying. Well, it makes perfect sense to me that she ought to be crying. She lost her husband and her only kid. And the first thing Jesus is going to say to her is, don't be crying. Can you think of another place in the Bible where it talks about weeping? All right, yeah, you're right. When he's in the garden, he's sweating drops of blood. All right, no, that's sweating drops of blood. That's sweating drops of blood. What? Yeah. Yeah. He said, right, you may have tears for a night, but joy comes in the morning. But I was thinking about what somebody else said when Lazarus was dead. It's my little brother's favorite memory verse. Shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept, okay? You remember why Jesus wept when he cried in that passage? It wasn't because Lazarus was dead. It wasn't because he lost his friend. It wasn't because he didn't know where he was, because Jesus fixed to bring that dude back to life, and they don't even know that yet. He ain't desperate. He ain't hurting. He ain't crying because he lost his buddy. He weeps because of unbelief of the people that are, they don't understand that he's the resurrection and the life. They don't understand who Jesus is. It stands right in front of them. And his weeping is not because of what he's lost. His weeping is because they ain't got a clue who he is. And then he's about to do something huge. And I want to submit to you this. Sometimes we don't pray, we don't have a miraculous answer of something that's too big for us to even ask God to do. Because we're too busy weeping about what seemed unfathomable for it to change. Okay, and here's what that weeping represents, I believe. It represents hopelessness. Here's a mama looking at a casket, dead baby in there, and she has no hope that he's going to come back. And sometimes if all you can see is what you see with your physical eyes, you get hopeless. We got to learn not to look at what we see, but what the Word says that we can have. And then not only hopelessness, but listen, the other thing that will keep you from praying this kind of prayer is faithlessness. It's just being unbelieving. In other words, I believe my circumstance more than I believe what God's ability is. As a matter of fact, sometimes faithlessness is more kin to my past than it is to God's present. And here's what I mean by that. Sometimes you think you're bigger than he is. I know we wouldn't even be in here having this tonight if somebody around here had messed up somewhere, right? Y'all with me? All right, so because we got this record. See, one of the things we do in our church, we have a rehab. We have like a 90-day place where guys come, and we just try to saturate them in the Word and trust the Spirit of God to just break those chains off those guys. But you know what? As a result of that, man, we meet a lot of people. We see a lot of things, and we hear a lot of stories. Did I tell you everybody's got a story? Well, the beautiful thing is that he'll meet you where your story is. But the problem with a lot of guys is this, and maybe with some of you, you got more faith in your track record. As a matter of fact, there's some people on the outside of these walls that if you get out of here sometime soon, they're going to be watching you close. And what are they expecting? Oh, yeah, they expect you to mess up again. And if some of them even want you to mess up again. You know why? Make them feel better about themselves. You know, but hey, they're gonna expect you to be messed up again. Why do they expect that? Well, see, they know about your yesterday. Hey, forget about them, but you gotta deal with you first. See, some of you probably have more faith in your ability to screw everything up than God's ability to turn your life around. Unbelieving is putting too much faith in my trajectory because of where I've come from and not seeing Jesus as the one who can turn it around. Some of us have never yet come to the place where I understand you can ask him to make the dead come to life. And if you're dead, guess what? He can make you come to life. So the thing that keeps you from praying this kind of prayer is hopelessness and unbelief. And the other thing is just ignorance. And when I say ignorance, you ever knew anybody that was ignorant? You know, she said, Michelle and raised her hand. That was me. I was ignorant. Hey, all ignorant means is you didn't know. And here's the deal. The reason Jesus wept that day when Lazarus was dead is because they didn't know. And the reason Mama's weeping is because she don't know who's in front of her. And she don't know what's possible if she could only believe. And by the grace of God, because of where she was, because of who she was, in spite of even her past or any circumstance other than the fact that God set her in a place where he could get glory if he did something big in her life, he brought her son back to life. Now, when he spoke to that son and he said, young man, arise, the scriptures we read just a while ago says he sat up and he began to speak. Now, I don't know if you kind of imagine being at that funeral. That's right. Today just got real interesting. Somebody found out they can run way faster than they thought they could. Yeah, because all of a sudden, man, this dude, they're carrying him out of town. They kind of already had the service. It's the graveside that's coming. They got him in this box without a top on it, and they're coming out of town. They done had the funeral, and now Jesus just says, arise. And this dude sits up and says, hey, I want to know what he said. I mean, you think about that with me for a minute. This guy sits up. What would you say? What are y'all doing? Well, y'all got me in this box. Wait a minute. What was y'all finna do with me? Hey, look, some of y'all, that's where you're at. Some of us in that box. But trust me, when Jesus speaks to you, everything about you is going to change. And you might sit up and look around and say, oh, y'all thought I was finna go down. I ain't going down. Woo! You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because that's who he is. It's what he does. It's what he does. Listen to the rest of that real quick, and I got to get to story number 3 and 4. And listen, here's what he says. It says, when the young man, verse 15, so he who was dead sat up and began to speak, and he presented him to his mother, and then fear came on them all. Well, yeah, it did. This ain't a normal day. Supernatural done hit us. And they glorified God, saying this, God has visited his people. God has visited his people. Look, don't let anybody write you off, but when they do, don't worry that they write you off. We were here the other night. We were talking about this part of the passage, and I tried to make a point to these guys, and I said, when Jesus touched this guy, he wasn't wondering. Oh, no, the people around him wasn't wondering if Jesus done something in him because he was dead, and now he's sitting up talking. Hey, when God does something in you, you won't have to use your lips. You won't have to be smooth talker to convince somebody that you're new. Because when it's real, he'll make it obvious in and through your life. Hey, but not only that, man. How much time we got in here, chap? Where's chap at? Hey, I hope we got all night. Look here. A few years ago, I had a guy in our church. He came to me and said, man, a bunch of things happened. And long story short, man, this guy got saved, and God began to change his life. And I started talking to him. He said, man, let's talk about baptism. And we got to talk about baptism. And he said, hey, listen, his marriage was kind of on the rocks because he'd been a jacked up husband for a long time. And his wife was tired of all that. And he said, hey, listen, man, I ain't scared to be baptized. I ain't ashamed to be baptized. I ain't ashamed to get in front of church and all this stuff. He said, but listen, I don't want my wife to think this is a stunt for me to try to keep her. He said, would it be okay if I wait just a little bit? Because I want her to see some change in me. I don't want her to think this is just some stunt for me to keep her. And so, man, I thought that was pretty cool. But he started walking out of the room, and he got to the door, and he turned around and said, wait a minute, Pastor. He said, man, there's more to it than that. He said, I need to know this ain't a stunt. I need to know this ain't just me trying to run a game again. I want to see him live himself out of me. I want to know. And you know, I knew at that point there's something about believing where you just have to believe at some spot, okay? But I liked what I heard in this guy. Because here's what our friend says all the time. If Jesus really touches your spirit and puts himself in you, time will tell. Time will tell. You don't have to run your mouth to prove it. He'll prove it through your life. And so the other night, this guy, we got to this part, and one of the guys said, he said, hey, I'll tell you what else. It wasn't just everybody else was sure that Jesus had touched him, but he said, I promise you this, that man sitting up in that casket talking, looking around going, what y'all doing? He sure didn't wonder if he'd been touched. And I want you to know, if you need him to touch you, when he touches you, he can do it in a way where you don't have to wonder if it's real. Third prayer, real quick. Third story. Go with me real fast to the end of the chapter. Verse 36 tells this story. And it says, one of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him. This is a Pharisee talking to Jesus. Okay, and the Pharisee said, I want you to come eat at my house. Y'all know who the Pharisees are. They're the real religious people. They're the people think they got it all together. They're the people that they got their act all cleaned up, and they think they're better than everybody else. They're people with a kind of holier-than-thou kind of attitude. And I'm not trying to diss on church people, but to be honest with you, I told my church yesterday after I preached in here last week, I don't even like my people at church anymore. I want to come in. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, because listen, the church, the real church, if you understand grace, you're never going to have spiritual pride, because we understand that every one of us is on the same plane. Every one of us is sinners in need of the grace of God. But God loved us so much that he sent his son. Whoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life. Hey, and in this story, there's a Pharisee who thinks he's got it all together. And more than likely, the reason he invites Jesus to come for a meal in his house isn't because he wants to honor him. We know it's not because he wants to honor him, because of what we're about to see. But more than likely, he's wanting to trap him. He's wanting to make him look. He's wanting to do something. So he says, hey, won't you come for dinner at my house? And he invites a group of people. And so he's having this meal. Jesus shows up at his house. And while Jesus is in the Pharisee's house, they're at the table eating, this woman shows up during the meal. And let's just read this part of the story. It starts in verse 36. One of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him, and when he went to the Pharisee's house, he sat down to eat. Verse 37 says, and behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at the table in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster flask of fragrant oil. and she stood at his feet behind him, weeping. And she began to wash his feet with her tears. Now, I want you to notice what he didn't say. He didn't say, quit weeping. See, she's doing a different kind of weeping. She began to wash his feet with her tears. She wiped them with the hair of her head, and she kissed his feet, and she anointed them with fragrant oil. Now, when the Pharisee who had been invited, who invited him in, saw this, he spoke to himself. And so this Pharisee speaks to himself. His name is Simon. And Simon starts talking to himself. And he said, prophet. If this guy was a prophet, he'd know what kind of woman's touching him. He would have nothing to do with that woman. All right? So you see the mentality of that. That's exactly what he says when it says he speaks to the Pharisee, verse 39, who had invited him, saw this. He spoke to himself and said, this man, if he was a prophet, he would know who and what manner of woman this is who's touching him, for she is a sinner. Now, maybe this Simon's trying to figure out if Jesus is real, if he's legit, but now all of a sudden he just wrote him off because Jesus let a sinner get close to him. But God's about to do a huge thing for this sinner. Let me chase the rabbit just for a second. I don't know if you got anybody that's got a translation that uses any word other than sinner, but we know what kind of sinner this lady was. She's a prostitute. All right, she uses her body to make her living. And she uses those fragrant oils that she brought in that place that day to help her make her living. And a couple weeks ago, when I was sharing this at our church, one of the guys was in the back corner. We got some pretty real dudes at our church. And one of them in the back corner said, hey, I want to know how she knew where that Pharisee's house was. Right? My thought was, he probably looked up and said, she's early. You know? Anyhow. But, you know, I mean, because we see that kind of thing happen. And while we're laughing, it really ain't that funny. But, I mean, it is a real possibility. And, you know, one of the other guys said, he said, not only that, but he made a great point. He said, man, that oil, he said, you know why she carried that oil? Because in her line of work, she got to smell good. But you know what she did with that oil? Number one, she risked her life when she walked in the Pharisee's house because he knows who she is. And the other one's there. Man, she could have lost her life. But the second thing, here's what we understand. She made up her mind before she ever went in that place, I'm not coming out of this place the way I go in. As a matter of fact, I'm carrying some stuff with me when I go in that I ain't carrying with me when I come out.
Well, that wraps up this week's Truth Infusion with Pastor David Markham. If you missed out on any part of this week's message, or if you know of someone that would benefit from today's word of truth, simply visit us at truthinfusion.com. That's truthinfusion.com. On our radio ministry page, you're free to stream the program of your choice to your computer or mobile device. While you're on the website, you can find out more about Truth Infusion Ministries, get information about upcoming events that may be taking place in your area, or sign up for our free internet newsletter. Truth Infusion is a listener-supported radio program and is furnished by Truth Infusion Ministries. To send us any questions or comments, or if you'd like to make a donation by mail, write to Truth Infusion Ministries, P.O. Box 637, Redwater, Texas 75573. Or email us at truthinfusion@gmail.com. I'm Corey Callicott. Thanks so much for joining us today. I encourage you to tune in next week for more solid biblical insight. And until then, keep seeking the truth.